Hi, thanks for downloading this episode of Discussing Documentaries with Rick Wharton and me, Matt Wills. Today we are doing our first docu-series. This is episode 1 of 6 of The Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst. Now, there are a few rules to this one that Rick's asked me to adhere to. I'm allowed to watch one episode and then we can dissect it. I'm not allowed to Google anything, including the blurb at the beginning. I can't even read that. I just have to go into the episode cold and just watch it. So I'm not allowed to know the accolades. Rick, you got to send me the accolades. It's killing me. Send me the accolades. So I don't know the money. I don't know anything, but I can read the blurb after I've watched the episode. Once I've watched the episode, we record it like we are now. And then once that's done, I can then move on to the next episode. And this is because, to quote Rick, I don't want to get too depressed. And apparently this one is quite hard hitting. Now, I've seen one episode. I'm in. I'm keen to watch them all back to back. But I'm a stickler for the rules, as you know. So let's stick to the rules. I got it from Sky Crime on Now TV, and it's made by HBO Documentaries, and it's from the year 2015, and the director was Andrew Janacki. And here's the blurb, episode 1 of 6, A Body in the Bay. Documentary examining the life of propertier and suspected murderer Robert Durst. So Rick, that was a 2-minute intro from me. You haven't even spoke. Lead us in, my man.
I was just seeing which other ways you can try and call me an arsehole before we start. Jesus, well, it makes it sound like I sit him down and be like, I will beat the fuck out of you if you mess. No, the point is, Matt, is if you get sick of a documentary, you become difficult 5 minutes into the podcast. So I am eking you out, as this is our first docu-series, and hopefully, fingers crossed, our first of the Patreon series. So I don't want you with what I would like to call a shitty attitude. So I'm sorry. I'm so sorry if you don't get to read what fucking Peabody Award it might have been nominated for. I want you to sit down and enjoy your thing and then talk about it.
What I love about the rules you've put in place, because I love a rule, that you've turned it into a game. And that's it for me. That's the minute it becomes a game, I'm like, oh, brilliant. I could play a game all day long. So I watched this the other day, and then ever since, I've been like a child pulling on his mum's apron, going, can we record? Can we record? Can we record? Come on, I've got to record. Let's record, because I want to get on to episode 2. And you're like, yeah, tomorrow. Let's do it tomorrow. There's a new FIFA box game out, or whatever it is you do. I don't know what you actually do, but there's that.
You're very close. You came very close. Yeah, I did buy the new FIFA this week, and my ultimate team is needing Saudi investment, hence launching the Patreon feed.
The only thing I want to know is the accolades, because I get a feeling this one's going to score.
We'll
high.
Do that all, so for all at the
episode
end.
2, just go, the accolades were good.
No, we do it at the end. We've got a full wrap-up conclusion. It's going to be excellent. So,
well, lead us in then. So The Jinx, why did you choose The Jinx?
So yeah, this is The Jinx. This documentary, I think The Jinx was the one that got me into true crime. I discovered it because Bill Burr was watching it when it first came out, and he talked about it on his The Monday Morning podcast. I was like, oh, I got to check that. And then just loved it from start to finish. This was done brilliantly from my perspective, and it's just a fascinating thing to get into.
So Bill Burr's the reason that I get miserable every other episode, is what you're saying?
More than likely, yeah.
Okay, then.
Because Bill Burr was also the first podcast I listened to, so yeah, doubly that's...
Okay. What I like about it, you said about the podcast, I like that in my podcast app, our podcast sits next to Bill Burr's podcast.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, I've deleted podcasts I don't want us to be next to.
Me too. We are so vain.
I once won a competition for Paramount Comedy, like just like an amateur stand-up thing. But since Paramount Comedy don't really represent live acts or anything, they have an A to Z of acts in their on their website at the time. And due to alphabetical order, my name appeared in the list three down from Richard Pryor.
Wow.
And I was like, screenshot that. That's enough for me. That's done.
I don't have to work hard anymore. I've achieved what I wanted.
Yeah. I was annoyed Ricky Gervais was even in between us. I'm like...
I had the British version of that, which is I managed to, when I first tried stand-up, I managed to worm myself on the bill with a guy called Bob Mills, and I was over the moon with that. And I begged to get on that bill just because I used to love watching his show In Bed With Me Dinner.
Episode one of the Patreon feed. If you're on this, by the way, and if this is the if you're hearing this and this isn't the Patreon feed, our self-esteem has took a battering. And we've released this for ease.
Okay, so episode one, lead us in.
So this starts off with almost everything I like in a documentary. It starts with a 911 call.
Yeah.
They're in Galveston, Texas, so you know they've all got mint accents.
Yeah.
There's a body found down by the river in 2001 in bin bags, just a torso, no head, toes poking out, and you meet Detective Cody Cazella, and he just says, I had no idea what I was fixing to step into.
I loved Cody. He looked like, I know you don't know him, but he looked like Cypress Joe. So I just loved, and I love Cypress Joe. So if you're murdered, he's the guy you want on your case.
No, he isn't.
This is why I wanted to watch the whole thing. What I liked about that initial couple of minutes. So if I was watching that with my family, my dad would press pause and he would look at me and my sister and he would go, you know what that head's singing right now, don't you? And this joke's been going on for near on 50 years, right? And we'd both look at my dad and we'd go, no, Dad, what song is that head singing? And my dad breaks into a rendition of, I ain't got nobody. Now, he's been doing that, no word of a lie, every single time something pops up where it's just the head. For years. And you'll be amazed how many times that pops up. So, that proper cracked me up because I was sitting there singing it to myself because it seeps into you.
And even like the title sequence, I love the song to it. It's cool as fuck.
The music in this is cool.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So they go through the bin bags and they find a newspaper, they find an apartment, register the Dorothy Signer. They realize it's Morris Black's apartment, and then they go to find out this whole bizarre web about Dorothy Signer, who's renting out this apartment. So Dorothy Signer, you're told, is apparently a deaf-mute female who lives in a dump but travels around the world and is never there. But her brother's sometimes there, which it turns out to be Robert Durst, has been pretending to be a woman, hiding in Galveston, Texas.
Just the way they describe the woman, in my brain I was like, that sounds like a geezer dressing up as a woman to me.
Because then they show you the court audio of them asking the landlord going, because towards the end it gets into his lawyers a little bit on episode one, but they're going to be a huge part of this. But so you got the lawyers are going to the landlord going, did you find Dorothy Signer attractive? Just asking all these kind of questions. And he's going, wouldn't be my type.
But they're asking the questions. And the landlord says to them, look, she was the perfect tenant. She paid up front and there was never any problem. Well, until the neighbour got killed. So they went through all his... they went through the rubbish of the other tenant in the building. And they find a glasses prescription that's due to be collected in the future. And then Cody Cazales sets up a reminder so that if the optician is contacted by the person picking up that prescription, they give him a shout. And he said, I couldn't believe it. The optician phoned me. And he goes, so we rocked up at the optician and we arrest Robert Durst. And he goes, I couldn't believe he went back for a glasses prescription.
And they look in the back of his car and there's a bone saw in the back of the car. And they're like, yeah, hey, we got him. Yeah. we got him.
Police work 101. It's never that easy, is it? Because normally they'd have to plant evidence. They'd have to find a guy.
So they're over the moon. And in the interviewing them, and they say, right, your bond is going to be $250,000. And then Robert Durst says, what should I do? He says, well, do you have $250,000? He goes, well, not on me. And like, this is all the detective's rendition. So even the surprise is still in his eyebrows when he says that. It's like, who the hell says this to this question?
Yeah. And Robert Durst's current wife, and that's what they bill her as, right, on the screen, because you see her talking. She sends him $250,000. It's there in the morning.
Yeah. Deborah Lee Charlton, I think she's called, or Charlatan.
And she's a confident lady, isn't she?
Oh, she is. Do you know that scene in Goodfellas when, like, the wives are all doing each other's hair and talking about beating the shit out of the kids with a mop handle? Like, she is fucking cast iron, that woman.
When the cop says to her, so when was the first time you heard about Galveston, Texas, in his apartment? And she went, when he phoned me from jail. So did you call him in jail? She went, no, that's not how jail works.
And she says, do I know what happened? Was I there? No, I wasn't there. It's like she'll ask herself a question, then answer it, and then shrug. I love it. This is how every time we watch some poor jelly brain get a coerced confession during a documentary, you look at Deborah Lee, this is how you answer shit during a deposition.
This is exactly how you do it, yeah. And then the cops basically start finding out who Robert Durst is. And it turns out that he was a prime suspect in the disappearance of his first wife in New York. And that he's from one of New York's wealthiest families.
Yep, the Durst real estate moguls. Like, they're absolutely massive. They own 9 of the tallest office blocks in New York, all within prime real estate in New York as well.
Wow.
So they are like the super richness, generational wealth as well. Like, this family's been doing it like from the elders. So like, their grandfather started this, or their grandfathers were a part of this, and then passed down and passed down again.
Well, they interviewed his brother. His brother's name is Douglas Durst. And did you get who he looked like?
No, who do you look like?
Do you know a guy called Alex Martini? We then start being introduced to, basically it's setting it up like a play, so you're introduced to characters bit by bit.
Yeah,
because after we meet his brother, and his brother's being deposed by the looks of it, which is basically he's being interviewed before they go to court to see, I'm guessing because they had a grand jury or something, from the little bits I know now of American law. Because they then interview, the next character is Janine Pirro. Now, she's the former district attorney of Westchester County, New York. And she is terrifying. Are all the women in this terrifying?
Yeah.
I don't know who cut up that body in the water, but my money would be on the wife or the district attorney, because they look that scary.
I think you stumbled on an interesting point, because they set up all the characters perfectly in this, because you're a little bit into episode one now and you still haven't heard or seen of Robert Durst.
No.
So you haven't heard Robert Durst even speak?
No, not at all. We haven't seen him in the yellow jumpsuit yet, have we? Because he breaks bail and he doesn't show up.
Yeah, he just doesn't show up. Yeah, he pays the $250,000 and then just bounces.
He does a bunk, yeah. And they said to Janine Pirro, you know, is that unusual? And she said, well, most people turn up if they're the main suspect in a murder trial.
when they're on trial for murder, they turn up. Not even a main suspect. They're the ones on trial. But the alias he uses is the name Dorothy Signer. And Dorothy Signer is literally a girl he went to school with.
And his face was next to her face in their high school yearbook. That was it.
Yeah. And her name then appeared on the FBI's 10 most wanted list because of one of his aliases.
Poor her, right? She's taking her kids to school one day and a helicopter swoops in and about five SUVs screech up to the school. Loads of geezers with glasses on come and jump on top of her, start beating the shit out of her. So he goes on the lam.
Yeah, he goes back to his old house in the South Salem, up in the Pennsylvania way.
On his wedding anniversary to his first wife. And, weirdly enough, his birthday. Who gets married on their birthday?
There's a lot of strange things he does, because he even rented a car as Morris Black, who's the man that he killed. So,
did he?
Yeah, there's a million and one different things that just skip you by unless you've seen this 19 times. Like, because, bless you, I told you you could only watch one episode. When I watched this the first time round a week or so ago, I then watched all six again. I love it.
Did you binge it first time as well?
Yeah, and then I'm going to go back through it before we do each one, because I'm just a fucking fan of it. I think this is up there with the best of them. So then, so he's on the lam. He's got, like, untold amount of resources. It's going to be difficult to capture. And then he gets arrested for trying to steal the sandwich.
Yeah, so it's a year later. And the weird thing is they arrest him and they go for all of his possessions in his car. He's got $38,000 in his car and he's arrested for stealing a $2 sandwich.
Yep.
He's also got two shooters and a load of weed.
Yep, and Morris Black's ID. He's got the ID of the guy who died.
He's reminded me of, have you ever seen a film with Michael Keaton and Matthew Modine called Pacific Heights?
I don't think so, no.
It's terrifying, right? Michael Keaton is really scary in it. And basically, he goes after their property and he gets them to basically give up their property to him. This Robert Durst guy is feeling like that character from Pacific Heights. It's proper scary. Then there's a New York Times guy is introduced, Charles Bagley, and he said he heard that they'd arrested Robert Durst, and he looks at the camera and he says, that can't be our Robert Durst, can it? What, for murder?
Yeah, because they've been following this guy for years. Like,
yeah.
Over the disappearance of his wife, it's like a super famous story. And then you come to the prison because they're interviewing his wife, Deborah, again. And this is something that I really, because it's just great because you haven't even heard the guy speak so far. And they've got the prison calls.
Well, she calls them on it, doesn't she? Because she's asked by the policeman interviewing her, so what did you talk about when he phoned you from prison? And she went, I can't remember specifics. All of those calls are recorded. You've got the tapes. Why don't you listen to them? Let's move on. And the cop is like, yes, ma'am. Okay.
And the calls are brilliant. I love the calls. He's just like, it's very cold in here. Like, and he's talking about how he likes wearing the jumpsuit. I've never worn one of these jumpsuits before, but they're really roomy. And it's kind of like when I discovered Marks and Spencer's slack pants during my unemployment. I get a call from our lass at work. I'll be like, yeah, these are, feel free in these.
And they have a conversation, about the jumpsuits. But you then see him walking through a corridor, handcuffed in the orange jumpsuit. And he looks into the camera. That motherfucker's scary.
Oh, he's cold. He is cold as ice, as Robert Durst.
I don't know if he's innocent, guilty. I don't know if it's a... I'm guessing there's going to be some sort of miscarriage of justice here, right? Because that's what all true crime stuff does.
But might as well wait and see what happens.
This guy's got guilty written all over him. And I'm like, you can see why they nicked him, right, for a start. You can see why he's prime suspect.
What's great is because part of you thinks, God, how's he going to survive in jail? Because he was in jail for months on road, because obviously not going to bail him after what had happened. And then they show you a picture of these two massive bruisers posing for a picture with him. It's like basically like his hired goons to keep him safe in jail.
Yeah. And the geezer's got money.
Yeah. Yeah, so they all call him Mr. Bob in jail, and they're all really nice to him and shit like that.
I like it when they say to him, so when he's in court, they said, oh, Mr. Durst, would you kindly raise your right hand and swear on the Bible? And he raises his right hand, and the left hand follows with it because they're handcuffed.
See, that's the thing. The more you see of Robert Durst, he is super charismatic. He is interesting to listen to. He is controlled. He's measured. One of the questions they asked him says, because he's deposed and this is on camera now. So again, the footage they've caught on this is up there with the best of the documentaries. So they say, do you know why your brother hired bodyguards? And he went, because he's a pussy. You got to remember, it's like a 60-year-old man.
Because that's how one brother would talk about his other brother, wouldn't it? Yeah, when we were six, he was a pussy then, he's a pussy now.
And then you have like his conversations with his wife about what facial expression to use as he's walking past cameras and stuff like that.
Yeah, like it's very calculated. And his current wife, Deborah, has a go at him for using the family Durst lawyer because it means if he's convicted, his very large trust fund, which they haven't really touched on yet, is taken away. And she proper lays into him.
Well, because so that's how the rich families protect themselves.
So they don't pay tax.
And not so they don't. It is so that it's probably a tax thing as well, without a doubt. But one of the things is none of them are independently rich. It's all within a trust within the family, so that if one gets divorced, they don't get half of their shit. They are each are worth nothing. So there's some of one like one person. And again, in case you have Robert Durst in the family who fucks up the way he does, because it's then told that like his younger brother Douglas, he got made the next leader of the Dursts instead of Robert and passed over him. So they're talking about how these lawyers are going to plead insanity so they can take away the power of attorney he gave to his missus so then she can't access the trust and she's threatening to divorce him.
Well, because he wants to hire a fella called Dick Dagerin, right? Now, he's a Texas criminal defense lawyer who Durst tells his wife on the phone he's the top Texas guy. And she says, no, he isn't. Mike Ramsey is. So he hires them both. And that's money talking right there.
This is fucking brilliant. This is if John DuPont didn't get into wrestling. This is the adventures of... This is fucking brilliant. I absolutely love it. So when you first meet Dick DeGaron, who is a Simpsons character of a lawyer in himself, your first sit-down talking heads of Dick DeGaron, there is three cowboy hats in shot.
I like when he says, I got into criminal law because I saw the light.
Oh, man. And then you hear what he's getting paid. So he pays him and the other top lawyer in Texas $600K each, plus another $300 for, I imagine, the jury. Fucking. And he goes, God, I hope that gets me acquitted.
Yeah. That's a hell of a quote, isn't it? Now, we're then introduced to a film. You get basically the Hollywood red carpet of a film being released. And the film is called All Good Things. And it's inspired by Robert Durst's first wife who went missing. Now, this is a Hollywood film. And at that point, right, my brain is firing off because I'm not known for my memory, but it's all in my head. And at times I can find that thread in there, right? Now, what's happening in my brain now is I know Robert Durst. And what my brain reaches is, did you ever watch The Good Wife?
Yes. Yes.
7 season. It's all about her as a lawyer. Superb, right? I love a courtroom drama type thing. So basically, there's a character in that named Colin Sweeney, and he's played by the excellent and scary Dylan Baker. Now, he's a multi-millionaire who everyone knows killed his wife, but there's no evidence. And he just keeps popping up now and again on other murder trials, which he keeps getting acquitted of. This is Robert Durst. This is exactly who they based that character on, Robert Durst. So straight away, I've gone from, well, it's going to be a wrongful conviction and he's being set up possibly by his brother, or there's some sort of incompetence by the police, to, hang on a second, he might be that rich nutter guy who killed his wife.
So Andrew Jarecki, who made the movie All Good Things, and it's about the Robert Durst story.
Right,
he's okay. The director of this documentary.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Him on the red carpet says, I would like to make a movie that Robert Durst himself could watch and have an emotional reaction to. And it's played by Ryan Gosling. And then the distributor gets a call and says, hi, it's Bob Durst.
How are you? He's so polite.
Can you just imagine the guy who directed Nightmare on Elm Street doesn't get a fucking phone call from Freddy Krueger and goes, Jimmy, saw the movie.
Love what you did there. Love it.
Because here's the thing. This is how much I love this documentary, Matt. I have watched that movie.
Now, I wanted to watch that movie, but I can't.
So yeah, you can't.
I will wait. It's okay.
You'll watch it at the end for episode 7. So,
so they set up to do an interview. Now, was this 10 years after he was arrested in Galveston? Because there was a huge chunk of time missing that I'm like,
10 years later.
What's going on here? So I don't know whether he did time for the murder of his neighbour. Did he get... I don't know anything, basically, because they didn't mention it. I didn't miss that, did I? They didn't.
No.
They didn't mention that in episode 1.
That's all episode 2 or 3.
So, and then basically it stops. And it was the second it stopped and the credits started rolling. And I thought, well, let me just... I watch the credits. We always watch the credits, right? And there was it was basically one of the executive producers was Jason Blum. Now, Blum he's from and the Blumhouse. Do you know? Have you heard of Blumhouse? So Blumhouse is like the new American equivalent of Hammer House. So they make horror movies. So they did Get Out, the Babysitter movie, Fantasy Island that just came out, and the superb, we watched it last week, a film called The Hunt, which is one of the best, and I don't like horror films, right? But I'll watch a Blumhouse horror. The Hunt, it's one of the best films I've ever seen. Just superb. And they're like 90-minute horror movies, and they're brilliant.
Is The Hunt like humans being tracked down, killed?
Yeah.
Yeah. The minute it becomes a game, Matt loves it.
Well, and they've always got a social twist on it. And their horror films always make a social message. It's very cleverly done. And then the other thing in the credits, I'm going to ask what I always ask. Did you watch the credits, Rick?
No.
No, okay. So there was a special thanks section in the documentary. They thanked J.J. Abrahams, Frank Langella, the actor, who's superb, Greg Kinnear, superb, Oscar nominated. And then they just had a normal thanks section. So they had a special thanks and then a thanks.
Oh, I've never noticed one of those before, yeah.
So you were either really good or you were just good. And then the second it finished, I was straight on the text to you. Go on, what time are we recording? Let's record now. You're like, it's 3 a.m. Fucking go back to sleep.
It sets it up brilliantly of hearing this fucking fit, this character, this person who's went, he's done this, he's done that. He's dismembered the body. He's jumped bail. He's got caught for nicking a sandwich. And then they went, yeah, he's called us and he wants an interview. And you're like, what? And then you see footage of him walking around with the director. And you're like, what the fuck? And then it ends there for part one. And fair play to you for holding out for your resolve for not watching part two, because I jumped straight on to part two after that. So,
What do you think's going to happen the second we leave the studio, Rick?
This is what we need. So this is going to wrap up part one of the Jinx of Six. Again, if this is the first on the Patreon feed, thank you very much again. And just
thank you so much.
Nice was it to hear us without hearing adverts? That's all I can say, because you guys must be sick of all those adverts we've been getting so far.
So listen, the other episodes are going to be down there. I'm going to go watch episode 2 now. So I'll see you later. Ta-da, Rick.
See you again soon. Take it easy.